This is for you. Yeah, it's 8:21. And we can start with the cell phone check. All the cell phones should be silenced. Okay, maybe you two guys shouldn't be sitting right there in the doorway.
Long enough for me to read that.
Why don't you scoot over a little bit? Yeah, pretend it's a doorway that you're not going to sit in. There you go. Avyakta. Akshara. Iti. Uktas. Tamahu. Paramam. Gatim. Yam. Prapya. Na. Nivartante. Tadhamma. Paramam. Mama. Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Yam prapyana nivartante.
Yam prapyana nivartante.
Tadhamma paramam mama.
Tadharma paramam mama.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Yam prapyana nivartante.
Yam prapyana nivartante.
Tadhamma paramam mama.
Tadharma paramam mama.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Yam prapyana nivartante.
Yam prapyana nivartante.
Tadhamma paramam mama.
Tadharma paramam mama. Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Tam ahur paramam gatim.
Tam ahur paramam gatim.
Yam prapyanani vartante.
Yam prapyanani vartante.
Tadharma paramam mama.
Tadharma paramam mama.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Tamahu paramam gatim.
Yam prapya nani vartante.
Yam prapya nani vartante.
Tadama paramam mama.
Tadama paramam mama. Who else? Well, ladies have all the books. Ladies?
Avyakto shara ikutas.
Avyaktokshara ityuktas. Tamahu paramam gatim.
Yam prapyanani vartante.
Tadharma paramam mama. Avyaktokshara ityuktas. Tamahu paramam gatim.
Yam
prapya nani vartante. Tadharma paramam mama. Avyaktaha.
Avyaktaha.
Unmanifested.
Unmanifested.
Aksharaha.
Aksharaha.
Infallible.
Infallible.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Uktaha.
Uktaha.
Is said.
Is said.
Tam.
Tam.
That.
That.
Ahuhu.
Ahu.
Is known.
Is known.
Paramam.
Paramam.
The ultimate.
The ultimate.
Gatim.
Gatim.
Destination.
Destination.
Yam.
Yam.
Which.
Which.
Prapya.
Prapya.
Gaining.
Gaining.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Nivartante.
Nivartante.
Come back.
Come back.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
That.
Abo. Dharma.
Dharma.
Abode.
Abode.
Paramam.
Paramam.
Supreme.
Supreme.
Mama.
Mama.
My.
My.
That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination. That place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. The supreme purport, abode of the personality of Godhead Krishna, is described in the Brahma Sanghita as Chintamani Dham, a place where all desires are fulfilled. The supreme abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There are also trees, called desire trees, that supply any type of eatable upon demand. And there are cows, known as Surabhi cows, which supply a limitless supply of milk. In this abode, the Lord is served by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis, and he is called Govinda, the primeval Lord, and the cause of all causes. The Lord is accustomed to blow his flute, Venum Kanvantam. His transcendental form is the most attractive in all the worlds. His eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of his body is like the color of clouds. He is so attractive that his beauty excels that of thousands of cupids. He wears saffron cloth, a garland around his neck, and a peacock feather in his hair. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives only a small hint of his personal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. A vivid description is given in the Brahma Sanghita. Vedic literatures, Katha Upanishad 1.3.11, state that there is nothing superior to the abode of the Supreme Godhead, and that that abode is the ultimate destination. Purushana param kinchit sa kashta paramagatihi. When one attains to it, he never returns to the material world. Krishna's supreme abode and Krishna himself are non-different, being of the same quality. On this earth, Vrindavan, 90 miles southeast of Delhi, is a replica of that supreme Goloka Vrindavan, located in the spiritual sky. When Krishna descends on this earth, he sported on that particular tract of land known as Vrindavan, comprising about 84 square miles in the district of Mathura, India. Do your books also say 84 square miles?
168.
Why is that? Someone just...
It's double.
Yes, double. Why is it double? I just did the research the other day because somebody asked me. I didn't even realize that it... or didn't remember that it had been done. What it is that Vrindavan is known to be 84 kroshas. And a krosha is 2 miles. So for the number to be right, you have to double it. And that's why we've got 84 square miles, but really it's 168. Every now and then, that one was brought to our attention by His Holiness Bhakti Vikash Maharaj and was confirmed. He gave a quotation, I think, from Jiva Goswami that confirmed that it was 84 kroshas. Generally, I think it's known as 16. Not 16. Chaurishi Krosha. What's Chaurishi Krosha? Do you have any Hindi wellers here? Chaurishi Krosh? No? Kitna? 84. Okay, Chaurishi Krosh. I know. Usually it's known as Shola Krosh. I think 16, but that's just the inner part of Vrindavan. So here it's the full thing is 84 kroshas. But again, times two. And we checked out the krosha calculation. Prabhupada, in several places in his book, says it's a quarter of a yojana. Quarter of a yojana. What's a yojana? Roughly 8 miles. So a quarter is two. I think I'm firm footing. My math's not very good, but 1/4 of eight is two, yeah, right? Okay. So we checked it all out, and it should be 168, and so now in the later printings, it is. That's the story.
Small. Glad we straightened that out.
Hmm?
I'm glad we
straightened that out. We would have been lost, right? Om Agana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shavadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Dadita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhau Dina Bandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kopitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyayeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Avyaktokshrit Yuktas Tamahu Paramam Gatim Yam Prapyanani Vartante Tadhama Paramam Mama. This is a description of the abode of Krishna. A light description, a brief description, just touching upon the abode of Krishna. Avyakta akshara iti ukta. That abode is said to be unmanifest, and akshara, infallible, imperishable. Ukta. Ukta means it's said. Said by whom? So the acharyas have clarified that ukta means said by the Vedantists, the Vedic scholars, and especially the students of the Upanishads and the Vedanta. They speak about the ultimate destination in these vague, impersonal terms. It's avyakta, it's akshar, it's unmanifested, because they're trying to understand it by the process of discriminating matter from spirit, or discriminating between illusion and reality. So they say, well, this is not reality, that's not reality, this isn't, that isn't. So the reality must be the opposite. And so what is the opposite? This is manifest, that must be unmanifest. Everything here is fallible, perishable, that must be infallible, imperishable. So in this way, they come to some understanding of the ultimate destination. But it's an understanding reached by a a negative process, by an intellectual process, or by hearing from the Vedas, because the Vedas say these things. The Upanishads speak of the Absolute Truth a little indirectly or vaguely in these terms, unmanifest, beyond this material world, infallible, but they don't go deeply into what's there. It's unmanifest, what's there? You know, I've got something behind my back, and the child will say, well, what is it? What is it? Well, it's something behind my back. Well, what is it? It must be something. It's not nothing. It's not just that it's you can't see. It's something you can't see. Thank you, thank you. So what is that something? That's the further inquiry. Satyam param dhimahi. It's the absolute truth. But what is that absolute truth? That's further identified in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So, avyakta akshar ityuktas tam ahu paramam gate. And a further designation given is, it's the supreme destination. Paramam gatim. There are so many destinations in this material world, but there's a supreme destination. So again, this sort of language is used. Sometimes we meet people from the impersonal school of spiritual teaching, and we say, well, what is your goal? And they'll say, the goal is the supreme reality. The goal is the ultimate. The goal is unmanifest. The goal is that which we cannot know. The goal is, you know, they'll speak in these abstract terms, impersonal terms, because that's as far as their information goes. And sometimes they'll speak about merging with that supreme, or sometimes they'll speak about similar ideas. We're also the same supreme, so many things. Because their information is limited. They know that there's some absolute truth, but they don't know clearly what the absolute truth is, and therefore they speak of it as something impersonal or something beyond description. I was listening to a conversation yesterday. Some fellow in Paris met with Prabhupada in a very challenging mood, and he was saying that God is beyond description. God cannot be known. God is the Word, and God cannot be known. And Prabhupada said to him, well, if God cannot be known, then what are you speaking about? What are you speaking about? You say that God is the Word, does that, then you must know God. He said, no, I don't know God. God is beyond knowing. God is beyond description. Then how do you say that God is the Word? Mm-hmm. And God wanted to be on both sides at the same time. And Prabhupada just cut him down the middle and said, no, this is contradictory. And the guy wouldn't accept it either. No. So, irrationally, people want to know God, but then they at the same time want to say that God is unknowable. People want to reach God, and yet God is unreachable. So many ideas. But we're taking our information from Bhagavad Gita. Avyaktokshara ityuktas tamahu paramam gatim. Yam prapyana nivartante. What else do we hear? It's that place from which, having gone, one never returns. We get that description. Well, what is it? It's a place from which, having gone, you know, almost like a horror movie sometimes if it were negative. What is it, you know, like, what is that place, this, the triangle? Bermuda Triangle. You know, what's the Bermuda Triangle? It's that place from which, having gone, no one ever returns. You know, or some creepy place. So, then what can you say about it? We can't say anything because no one's ever come back. So, this, of course, is not a creepy place. This is a place we want to go. But it's spoken of as that place from which, having gone, one never returns. But what is that place? Infallible, it's unmanifest, it's the supreme destination, it's the place from which once you've gone you never come back. What is it? Tadhama paramam mama. That's my supreme abode, Krishna says. Madhama. That's my place. It's not Krishna's a person. So he has his name, he has his form, he has his qualities, he has his pastimes, he has his abode also. Tadhama. Paramam mama. His supreme abode. Every place is his abode. He's sarvagata. He lives everywhere. But he particularly has his supreme abode. And that's mentioned here. Tadhama paramam mama. And Srila Prabhupada further cites the Brahma Sangita, where we get detailed information about Krishna's abode. Here in Bhagavad Gita, just grazing the topic, just glancing upon the topic. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Brahma Sangita, we get detailed knowledge of Krishna's abode. Chintamani prakara sadhamasu kalpa briksha laksha vitesu. Chintamani means a wish-fulfilling stone. Chintamani. Chinta means thought. And money means gem. So thought gems. From the thought gem you can get whatever you want. That's Chintamani. Chintamani. The Chintamani is conscious. In the material world, the bricks, or this isn't brick, this is something else, whatever it is, wood, brick, it's not conscious. It's inert. It has no life there. Dead matter. But the houses in the spiritual world, or the ground in the spiritual world, is all Chintamani. That means it's alive. Because there's no matter in the spiritual world. Everything is conscious. The ground itself is conscious. The houses themselves are conscious. There's nothing in the spiritual world which is outside the realm of pure consciousness. Everything's alive. So Chintamani, Prakara Sadhamasu, the houses are made of Chintamani, and Kalpa Briksha, the trees are desire-fulfilling trees. That means here we have a tree, of course we have so many trees which are just useless. They're just firewood, not totally useless, but they're just firewood. Those are the ones that are usually planted in public parks and alongside of the road. Trees that have no value other than if you chop them down. If you chop them down, you know, like a dead body, when the body of some animal is dead, then they can take the hide and skin it and use it for something. But while the animal is alive, it's of no use to them. So the trees, so many trees, you say, oh, so many trees, but what do they give? Nothing. No fruits, no flowers. If they have flowers, the flowers have no scent. Why are they planting these useless trees? It means people have no brain. There's so many trees that give fruit. fruits, fragrant flowers, nuts. Why not plant those trees? Why not plant those trees? But people, even in your, on our own property, we'll plant trees that are useless. And then we'll go to the supermarket and pay, you know, so much money for 6-week-old fruit shipped in from Chile, green, and ripened somewhere in a warehouse someplace. And by Krishna's arrangement, you plant the pious trees, and you'll get fruits, you'll get flowers, and you can offer to Krishna nice flowers, nice fruits. But no, people have to plant decorative trees. They look nice. Decorative means it's all looks. It's all looks. Machine that's supposed to give something, but it doesn't give, but it looks nice. You know, like an iPod that looks really good, but it won't play music. But it looks nice. So the trees are decorative trees. They're good for decoration, for show. But they don't give anything offerable. And then, of course, there are the pious trees that give fruits, that give flowers. But they only give one kind. From the apple tree, you only get apples. From the peach tree, you only get peaches. From the mango tree, you only get mangoes. But in the spiritual world, from any tree, you get anything you want. You want peaches from the tree, you want apples from the tree, you want mangoes from the tree. You want anything from the tree. Kalpa Vriksha, it's a wish-fulfilling tree. You get whatever you want. But we read that the devotees in the spiritual world have no desires. Here we would kill to get a tree like that. But there, they have such trees, but they don't care. They have no desires to be fulfilled. Their only desire is for devotional service, to please Krishna. That desire is the only desire. Nadanam najanam sundarim kavitam va. Jagadishakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is pure devotional service. I don't want any money. I don't want any followers. I don't want a beautiful wife. I don't want liberation. What do you want? I just want to serve you. I just want to serve you. So in the spiritual, this is the pure consciousness of the living entity. I just want to serve you. Not I want to enjoy. But constitutionally, we're servants. So when this consciousness is revived, then the living being is in his natural, pure condition, fit for living in the spiritual world. The spiritual world has no accommodating space for materialists. There's no quarter or colony or district where they say, well, those of you who want to enjoy separately from God, you stay here, this part of the spiritual world. Actually, there is. That part of the spiritual world is where we are now. It's called the material world. The clouded portion of the spiritual world. Because there's nothing outside the spiritual world. Everything is the spiritual world. But a portion of the spiritual world is clouded over by forgetfulness of Krishna, by Maya. And that's where we are now. Otherwise, it's the spiritual world. We simply have to change our consciousness. So, Surabhi Rabhi Palayantam. And in Goloka Vrindavan, it's called Goloka Vrindavan, the cow planet. Go means cows. The planet where Krishna is there as a cowherd boy, Govinda, Gopal, with so many cows, which give unlimited milk in the form of love for Krishna. These are Krishna's pet animals. Prabhupada said in the material world, Dogga bi rabi padayanta. If people are keeping dogs as pets, a noxious animal actually, always barking and offensive, and what does it produce? Nothing valuable, only stuff that these sophisticated modern ladies and gentlemen pick up in little plastic bags. He's making $100,000 a year and acting as the what would you say?
A servant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the servant of a dog. Dutifully picking up the stool of the dog. So the cow is the valuable, again, you know, they're trees with no fruits, no flowers, animals that just bark. The cow, even in this material world, it gives milk. From milk you get butter, cheese, yogurt, so many things. Even the stool of the cow is useful. It's useful for fuel. It has medicinal, it's useful antiseptic properties. What dog stool is not appreciated? Whoever finds a good use for dog stool will probably become the next millionaire. So, Surabhi Rabhi Palyantam and Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevam. And there are thousands and thousands of goddesses of fortune who are all devoted to the Lord. Govindamadi Purusham Tamahang Vidhan. And Krishna is blowing on his flute, Venu. He has different kinds of flutes, Murli, Venu. Some of them are longer, some of them are shorter. Plays them on different occasions and gives different kinds of sound. And his eyes are like Aravinda, like the lotus flower. Aravinda Dalaya Taksham. Parahavatam Samasitam Burusundaram. And his color is like the color of dark monsoon clouds. Very beautiful color. Sometimes if you ever, of course those who are from India, you've seen the monsoon clouds. Very striking, very gorgeous, the deep, dark blue, very gorgeous color. Shyamam Tribhanga Lalitam. So Krishna's, and Kandarpa Koti Kamani Abhishekha. He always is engaged in loving pastimes. Shamam Jivanga Lalitam Niyata Prakasha. He is always standing in an attractive threefold bending form. So this description is there in the Brahma Sangita of Krishna and Krishna's abode. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, the Goloka Vrindavan is described in detail. And the replica is found here in the material world in Vrindavan Dham, just in the Mathura district of Uttar Pradesh in India. And the specific feature of that Vrindavan is that one who goes there will naturally become develop attraction for Krishna. The whole Vrindavan is meant for Krishna consciousness, and the natural atmosphere of Vrindavan gives some idea of the Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. Now, of course, they're very busy destroying that Vrindavan environment with so many nasty things. But the natural environment of Vrindavan can still be found in some places. And it gives an idea of the beauty of the spiritual world, of the attractiveness of Krishna. And one who lives there, practicing Krishna consciousness, will feel the presence of Krishna. Prabhupada said it's like the Vrindavan embassy. The American government establishes its embassies all over the world. And the embassy is actually as good as the United States of America. It's manned by Americans, the soldiers are American, the Coke machine in the lobby is American. Pay in American dollars, everything is American. Although it may be in Spain or Italy or India or Thailand or Guatemala or wherever it may be. But it's America. It's America. So this Mathura Vrindavan is also Goloka Vrindavan, but it's the Vrindavan embassy in the spiritual, in the material world. So one has to only change one's vision. That's also said. Vishaya chorya kobe shuddha habena. That when we give up the mentality of trying to lord it over this material world, and our consciousness becomes pure, shuddha habena, then we'll be able to appreciate what is Vrindavan, who is Krishna, what is devotional service. All of these things will become clear. So the process is there in the form of chanting this Maha Mantra. By chanting Hare Krishna and following the directions of Bhagavad Gita under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, by following the principles of Krishna consciousness, we can revive our eternal relationship with Krishna and return to that spiritual world. What is that? Mam upecha punar janma dukalayam ashashvatam napnuvanti mahatmanah sangsiddhim paramam gatam. When one goes back to that Goloka Vrindavan, he never wants to come back to this temporary, material, miserable existence. He remains in the spiritual abode of Krishna in his eternal life. Okay. Any questions?
I just have a question on the impersonalist understanding of the unmanifested. Is this unmanifested conscious?
You can ask them and see what kind of equivocal answer they give, but it shouldn't be, because everything is one. And if everything's one, the subject-object duality can't exist. Subject-object duality means there's someone who's seeing and there's something which is seen. There's something which is tasted and there's someone who's tasting. That's duality. There's a difference between the two. And the Advaita philosophers, the monists, they don't admit the existence of two-ness. Dvaita. Everything has to be one. So if everything is one, there can't be this subject-object distinction. And therefore, consciousness as we know it can't exist, because consciousness means there's a conscious knower, and there's something that he's conscious of. Well, that's Maya. That can't exist. That's duality. So even if they speak of a world of pure consciousness or something, they don't really mean it. Or they don't mean it in any reasonable sense. Because consciousness means consciousness of something. Consciousness of something. So that's out of the picture for them.
If, I mean, that's the way I thought they think. So if that's the way they think about the unmanifested, here it says that he's infallible, or it's infallible. How can it be infallible if there's no consciousness? What's the question of infallible?
Well, consciousness, it may be, it's Satchidananda. It's conscious. The truth is consciousness. But it's a sort of stripped down consciousness, or a consciousness with no object. So they'll say Satchidananda. Chit means consciousness. Satchit. And they'll say Ananda also, bliss. But where's the question of bliss without personhood? Who is there to be blissful? And what is there to be blissful about? So they'd like to have a sort of unembodied eternal bliss. But in what way? In what sensible way? It's just homogenized bliss. You mix up eternity, knowledge, and bliss into one homogeneous substance, and that's their absolute truth. Then the question, of course, is, since there's nothing existing other than absolute truth, what are we doing here? And what's the world doing here? It can't really exist because there's only one, and that would be two. And then they say, well, that's just seems to be, we seem to exist and the world seems to exist because of illusion. Well, now again you have two. You've got the truth and illusion. They're in serious trouble. If everything is one, where does illusion come from? I'm God, I've just forgotten I'm God. Why have I forgotten? Because of illusion. Where does the illusion come from? And how does God fall under it? There's so much flim-flam.
It's something about the two questions. The first one is about the trees. You said there is no much use for trees which doesn't produce fruits or flowers, right? But how about
there's some use, but they're second class.
Mm-hmm. How about what?
So how about all of the oxygen? We basically...
All of the?
Oxygen.
We mostly of the
sea. Yeah, all right, you get oxygen from the trees. But, you know, what is that? I mean, all you get is oxygen. But from a plum tree, you'll get oxygen also, but you get plums. You'll get wood also, but you'll get plums.
So
you'll get shade also, but you'll get plums. But they'll get something which just gives you shade and oxygen. That means they're second class.
Okay, so does it mean they only have fruit and flowers, trees in the spiritual world?
Yeah, everything in the spiritual world is a pious tree. Even if you go to, you know, some of the nice ashrams, if you go to a really nice ashram, the trees are, it's like gorgeous. You go to some little hermitage or some little ashram, and the trees are, you know, full of flowers and fruits. They'll have champak trees, and they'll have jasmine, and they'll have, you know, and you could have that everywhere, but they're not thinking about it. They're not thinking about it.
Okay. The second question. Well, thank you. The second question is related to we read in here. When one attains to the spiritual world, you will never return to the material world. Okay, so does it mean you don't have a free will anymore?
You're free to return, but you won't do it.
So there is no way for you to fail anymore once you are taking a spiritual.
You want to go and look for a way?
Well, I think we in here have a free will, right? We can choose Krishna or
yeah.
No Krishna. That's why we are in here, right?
Right.
Okay, so
you can still choose there, but no one chooses wrong.
You've already experienced this.
Okay.
So do they give, like, there are other animals in the spiritual world, right?
Oh, yes.
Like rabbits and deer, maybe?
There's deer, at least.
Yeah. Do they give the description in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Because I know I've read about some.
Yeah, the animals are described. They're parrots. They're deer. The deer are described that when they hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they become stunned. They stand with tears in their eyes. They become stunned. Gopis were addressing the deer. You must have heard the flute of Krishna. You're stunned in this way. There are peacocks. Again, birds are not these. You know, like what do they call them? Pigeons, crows. You know, just you go to the spiritual world. It's not like New York City. You know, flocks of pigeons. They have parrots and beautiful birds, peacocks.
So they must have a lot of different tastes too, like different tastes of fruit. And
absolutely, absolutely. All the tastes are fully fulfilled in the spiritual world.
So when we go back to the spiritual world, anybody could be one of those things. We could be a deer, and that's our eternal relationship with Krishna?
Yeah, you can be a deer. The deer have an appreciative relationship with Krishna. They don't do a whole lot, but Krishna can pat them there, appreciative of Krishna.
And you said the walls are touchstones, so they're alive, so could you be like a house?
Yeah, the devotees can take different forms. If they like, they can. A devotee can become a house for Krishna. You can even, you know, display some versatility. That's described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The devotees can transform themselves into a house or whatever, just for Krishna's pleasure. Yes?
Soul moves there also from the deer body to the man body to some other animal.
In the spiritual
body.
World?
In the spiritual body, yes.
That's, yeah, you can. There's a little opportunity for
I think you said the soul goes from a deer body.
Oh, no, there's no deer body. The bodies are all spiritual, so there's none of this transmigration is found in the material.
If somebody is deer, they stay as deer and they...
Yeah, generally they stay as whatever, because that's eternal. Just if they'd like to do something else for Krishna's pleasure, if the deer wants to be a parrot for some reason, for Krishna's pleasure, be a parrot. But generally there's stability. The living entities keep their eternal forms.
So, like, can you move, like, higher in spiritual life in the spiritual world? Because I think I was reading in the Krishna
What's higher?
Once, like, I remember that I think I heard, like, the gopis were wondering, like, what did the flute do in their spiritual life to attain such a high relationship with Krishna?
In the spiritual world, everyone's in the highest relationship with Krishna. There's no higher. In the spiritual world, there's no higher than or lower. Everything is absolute.
Even the gopis?
Especially the gopis, or equally so the gopis. Everybody's in an absolute position. Therefore, in the material world, there's this sort of higher and lower, and there's like class struggle, where there's competition in the job market, you know, people are like clawing at one another to get a higher position, or they're lobbying, or they're maneuvering, but and they're envious of those who are above and trying to push everybody, you know. Even I was hearing somebody, I had a friend in the Middle East, he was doing Hare Krishna activities, and one of his colleagues came to know of it and had in mind to report him to the authorities for the simple reason that if our man got moved out of his position at work, this man would move up one notch. Just envious. So these things are going on. But in the spiritual world, there's appreciation of everyone. When the gopis are chanting very beautifully, singing very beautifully, but when the bees hum, the gopis stop to listen because the bees are chanting Hare Krishna. There's appreciation. There's not a bee. I'm singing. What are the bees doing?
Yeah.
No, there's appreciation. Bees are also glorifying Krishna. How nice. So there's not this envy. There's appreciation. Yes? Is that a hand? No. Something else? That's the spiritual world. There's appreciation on all sides.
And I was getting the question from chapter 1.
Chapter 1.
Arjuna is talking to Krishna. He's giving reasons to not fight the battle. And he says that he refers to Krishna as Janardana, maintainer of living entities.
Mm.
And then Krishna explains to him that I have already killed all these people when Arjuna is lamenting.
Mm.
Does Krishna mean that because he has decided that at this point of time they will be killed? Is that what he means? That I've already killed these people?
That's not chapter 1 where he says I've killed them. That's 11th chapter.
Yeah.
I've already killed everyone. Yeah, that means it's decided. Time, you can say it's their destiny. Krishna in the form of time has already fixed how long, you know, what their fate is.
But isn't that decided for then everybody? Does that mean that we are also dead?
Yeah, everybody's Kala. Krishna says, I'm time. Kalosmi. So I'm time. What is my business? Loka kriyat pravidho. Killing everyone. Not only Drona, Karna, Jayadrata. Everybody. But these particular people, they're already dead. What does that mean? That in the battle of Kurukshetra, their end is
certain.
Otherwise, everyone's end is certain. Jata sihi dhruvamitra. For one who's born, death is certain. That's for sure. But Krishna shows him that I've already killed all the people on the battlefield. I've already killed all the people on the battlefield. That means give it a few days and they're dead. Is that okay?
Maharaj, I know one should take up a guru to advance in spiritual life.
Mm.
I know some of the reasons, but can you tell me the few important reasons why a guru is important?
Tad vijnanartham sa guru meva abhigacchet. If one wants to get realization of the subject matter of Krishna consciousness, one must approach a bona fide guru. Gyan you can get by reading a book. You can read the book and say, now I know. But do you really know? You don't know. You want to be an optician, you've read a book about the work. But that doesn't mean now you're ready to do it. You go to school, you're trained by the experts. Then you know what to do, how to do it. Anything, medicine, engineering. You can go read books, but that doesn't give you actual, real understanding, practical understanding. It gives you theoretical understanding. If you want it to be practical understanding, then you have to adopt the process. You have to go to the school, attend the classes, hear from the teacher, sit for the exams.
Maharaj,
So, vigyanartham, for the sake of realization of Krishna consciousness, guru meva vigyachet, one must approach a bona fide guru. Vigyachet means it's not optional, one must do that. It means if we actually want to, you know, why are we here? Why are we interested in Krishna consciousness? It's not just that we're a batch of professors, you know, this is interesting. there are people who do that. They read all the literature. They may study Sanskrit and become great experts. But what is their interest? Their interest is to have something to talk about. Very interesting. Something to intellectualize about. But not something to implement in their lives. Because they don't take up the process, they don't get there. Or because they're not interested in that, they don't take up the process, and so they don't get there. But if one wants to get the intended benefit of hearing Bhagavad Gita, then one has to hear from a bona fide spiritual master. Tad vidhi pranipatena pariprasnena. Is that okay?
Just a comment on that. I have a friend of mine whose nephew teaches the Bhagavad Gita in a pretty big university in New York, and he's an atheist.
Yeah, he's an atheist.
I mean, he's really an atheist. He's vegetarian, but he's an atheist.
There's a lot of most teachers of Bhagavad Gita are atheists. And what's the use of hearing Bhagavad Gita from them? For them, it's something to teach, something to read, something to speculate about, but not something that they can understand. They're the bees licking on the bottle of honey. Unless you open the bottle, you can't taste it. But they want to lick on the bottle only. They don't want to open it up by following the process.
I have a little confusion too. Sometimes we say that we came to the material world because in the spiritual world probably we were there before and we were envious of Krishna, and then we are here. Now say if we go back to Godhead, will I become envious of Krishna again?
No. You can't even figure out how you came here, when you came here. It's said that Anadi Bahir Mukti, we're turning away from Krishna since time immemorial. So when we got this way, no one could even figure out. There's no time in the spiritual world. So we're, since time immemorial, averse to Krishna consciousness. But upon going back to Godhead, we'll never come back here. That guarantee is given.
Who's
Jaya Advaita?
Who's he?
Jaya Advaita? I don't know. That's me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you just mentioned Karna, Jaya Advaita.
Jaya Drata.
Adrata, okay.
Jaya Drata. He's one of the great soldiers in the Kurukshetra war. Jaya Drata. He was the rascal who insulted Draupadi, wasn't he? I think so. Tried to kidnap Draupadi at one point. Was humiliated by Arjuna. Yeah? Isn't that the story? Who are Mahabharat fans? Come on.
Jayadratha actually stopped the Pandavas from entering the Chakravyuha.
Right.
So Abhimanyu was killed.
That was later.
Yeah, but before that it was like his mouth statues was taken out by Arjuna and all that stuff.
His?
So the mouth statues were taken out by Arjuna because, you are right. So
he insulted Draupadi.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, then he was involved in he prevented the Pandavas from rescuing Abhimanyu. Then finally he was killed by Arjuna by the arrangement of Krishna. So that's Jayadvata.
Who's Jaya?
Advaita, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha. Jaya. Anything else? Okay. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Jai Advaita Swami ki
jai.
Pyari Mohan Prabhu ki jai.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.
Jai.
Gaur Premanande.